6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. I am Chris at Lifeforce, joined virtually by Anna Forsyth at A4Size03. Missing in action tonight because his internet ain't good. Mattly at Mattly underscore 61. And continuing to remain unfit to podcast, albeit now with a suspect pitcher in Discord, is Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC. But I think Anna and I have lined up by far a better replacement, one that is superior than Matt and Adam combined. And that's right, we have John Barr from the Sound of Hockey podcast, formerly NHLToSeattle.com. John, welcome to C4.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Is this like a tryout like for the other people? Like if I do well, will I get invited back?
Yeah, and already you're 10 steps ahead by showing up.
Okay. Yeah, showing up.
Showing up. All right. I'm excited. Love talking hockey, so yeah.
Yeah, if our listeners are on board with you replacing Matt and Adam, I mean, just saying.
Who's going to tell them off, right? Yeah.
But thanks for coming out. As we talked about in our last show, really the idea is to hear about what's going on, you know, down the, what we would know up here as Highway 99, but once you cross the border, not only do we have to go look at the small numbers on our, you know, speedometer, it's down the I-5 into Seattle. Yeah. And hear what's going on with the Kraken. I mean, we did a little R&D and discovered you're pretty well connected to that franchise. Some of the guests you've been rocking on your show, the news that you've been sharing. Like we were, you know, you had mentioned you'd listened to our last episode. We're kind of a little jealous here at C4 of the access you have to this team. So that's pretty cool.
That's right. I'm a small fish in a very small pond where... You're a medium-sized fish in a very big pond up there. Oh, so,
you speak highly of us being a medium-sized fish. You know, I think there's
200 little minnows up here, but
it's all relative. It's all relative.
Awesome, but yeah, we're going to spend some time talking to you a little bit about the Seattle Kraken, how they came to be, how you became a podcaster of a Seattle to or NHL to Seattle podcast. We'll sort of talk about that journey, get your thoughts on the NHL, maybe your thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks and the Holtby Turtle controversy. All that and more coming up on the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. You're listening to us on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network. Okay, let's start off with the journey here. So Seattle had been rumored to be a NHL target for some time. I don't think it's any surprise the NHL, specifically looking in the U.S., is looking for big markets, Seattle being a pretty sizable one on the West Coast. When you consider California has 20 franchises already, so, you know, where else might you go on the West? At what point did you sort of find yourself really getting into action? Like, was it before, you know, the rumor of the expansion? Was it after? Like, you know, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, it was actually well before kind of expansion was even a sniff on the radar. It really started as, you know, I moved here about 14 years ago and loved hockey. I grew up in California and in a place where there wasn't hockey until the Sharks moved in. And then the Sharks kind of really did well down there and captivated kind of a fan base down there. And so then when I moved up here, eventually, I was like, man, Seattle is 10 times the market that San Jose was before the Sharks moved in. Mm-hmm. And so I was always kind of convinced that Seattle would make a great market. And I started researching why they didn't have a franchise. And it really came down to no arena to play, right? There was Key Arena. And at the time, the Sonics were playing in it. But the T-Birds played in it when I first moved up here. And it was like lopped off on the end, kind of like how the Islanders situation is where they're playing into that SUV.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh, this would be a great market and was just well studied and would just kind of start to engage with other hockey fans and say like, Seattle would be a great market because, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so I was well studied. And then there was a, it's probably 2011, 2012. Actually, if I even go back to 2010 at the Vancouver Olympics, there was a report that somebody was looking to bring an NHL team to Seattle. And that was like the first time that was like even on the radar that Seattle would kind of get a team, but nobody was talking about expansion, but actually Bill Daly confirmed it. But it was that kind of moment at the Olympics where I'm like, wow, it's cool that someone's looking at bringing a team here. So fast forward a couple of years, there was Chris Hansen is a basketball guy. He wanted to bring the Sonics back. So this might've been 2012. And he had an arena plan and he kind of mentioned hockey should come back or should come as well. Like the arena will accommodate hockey and basketball, but he was definitely a basketball guy. So that was kind of my trigger to kind of jump into action. I already had like a pretty good network of hockey fans because I would email people about things and I play hockey. And like at the time I was probably playing three different teams up here. So I just was like, well, they're kind of rallying basketball fans, so I'm going to be the hockey fans equivalent of the basketball fans. And there's no doubt in my mind that Sonics fans outnumbered the hockey fans like 50-1, right? Like that's like, there's a picture of me at a city council meeting, right? And it's me wearing a Blackhawks jersey and a buddy next to me wearing a Sharks jersey and a sea of green Sonics jerseys behind me, like 50 wow. jerseys behind me. So that's where it kind of like the origin story, if you will, but like I flew under the radar relatively, for a long time. But just trying to advocate, get hockey fans to be present, to be at city council meetings, because there's this whole political landscape that you just have to kind of, you need to make sure that the city knows that there's hockey fans here. And that was like an important piece. And so that, long story short, that arena failed for several reasons. And in the meantime, some owners had like reached out, some potential owners had reached out to me, right? Whether it be by proxy or by, you know, some other avenue and talked about other arena options. And one of them was in Bellevue. And I thought that was maybe going to happen. Bellevue is about 15 miles to the, or maybe 10 miles to
I've been there several times.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
it's nice, but it's a little, nice little rich suburb, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's where like Microsoft is. And there's a lot of, you know, like there's a lot of commerce there. So it's not, it wouldn't be unheard of. That's a place it could have easily accommodated, I think, as well. But so I didn't lose hope. Right. I think that's the message there is I didn't lose hope in that journey. So even if it, you know, it was dark times because there was no real tangible arena plan, I still kind of would, you know, hear from potential owners every once in a while, like not like once a month, it would be like every couple months, even though I was chomping at the bit to hear more but there wasn't really much to report. So that arena deal fails in SoDo. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, who's going to pop up to potentially be that savior, if you will. And up comes this name, Oakview Group, which is head by Tim Lewicki. And Tim Lewicki, I knew who he was because he was the president of AEG, but he was also the president of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. And he was starting a new venture about developing arenas and, you know, concert halls and stuff like that. He used to head up AEG, which owned the Kings, right? So that was the first name that kind of came into play where I'm like, wow, this is a big player, right? Like somebody like this doesn't get involved and it like fails, right? Or is just, you know, kind of serious. Like, and everybody else, I would have supported anybody that would have brought hockey here, right? But Tim Lewicki was like, you couldn't have written a better person to kind of head this thing up. And they reached out to me really early on to build a relationship with the hockey community. And they said, hey, we're going to redevelop Key Arena. We want to redevelop Key Arena. and we want to bring hockey here. I'm like, let's go. You had me at hello, right? Like, that's literally what it was. Mm-hmm. And I even got to meet with Tim Lewicki, and he's like pitching me. And I'm like, dude, I'm already in. Right? Just tell me what I need to do. The thing is, they didn't have a lot of allies. So, but what they did that same approach with a lot of people in the city, built relationships, heard concerns. My biggest concern was making sure that they put an arena, make sure the NHL is okay with that redeveloped arena. Mm-hmm. That's my only concern. And I really never got it. They would tell me they're fine with it, but they would never validate for sure, or show me any documentation, but I wasn't really pushing that hard. But that was my only concern, because I just wanted a hockey team here. So that started like a 2-year process of being in city council meetings, being at public hearings, advocating, making sure I can rally the community to show up at these city council meetings, which again are very important, because the city needs to know, the city council needs to know that there is hockey fans and it's worth doing, right? Because that's a lot of work that they needed to do. Even though OVG was paying the whole thing, they had to put resources and focus and full-time employees focused on that effort to make sure everything went well. And, lo and behold, it happened, right? And I'll never forget, we got the arena approved on a Tuesday in city council. Big moment, very excited. And then 2 days later, the mayor signed the actual letter of intent or whatever, the MOU is what it was. And I was excited. And all along, they're like, oh, the NHL should come quickly, right? And to me, quickly was 2 years. That's 2 years, where they would acknowledge that they're accepting a bid from Seattle. It was literally 2 days later, Gary Bettman announces that they've received a bid from Seattle and for the purposes of expansion. And originally it was targeted for 2020. I don't know if you remember that, but good thing that didn't happen. But I think it was a risky schedule to push for 2020. And I think that was probably a good choice, but yeah. And, we still had that ticket drive to kind of do, and cause Vegas had to do a ticket drive. And that was 3 or 4 months later after the application had been accepted. And I remember losing sleep that whole week leading up to that ticket drive and freaked out, because I'm like, everything I've done is for this moment. Cause what if nobody shows up? And at the time, mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of hockey people, but I don't know 10,000 hockey people in the mm-hmm. area. And I don't know 10,000 that would put down deposits. Even the hockey people I know, I wasn't sure if they would get season tickets. And that was a smashing success, 10,000 deposits in 12 minutes.
I was going to say, I think it was 15 minutes. Yeah.
The whole week I was losing sleep, and I literally paid advertising dollars for my Facebook group to make sure people knew that the ticket drive was happening, because I was spooked that it wouldn't happen. And that day of the ticket drive, they raised a flag on top of the Space Needle, an NHL flag. Mm-hmm. And I was invited up with everybody. So it was Jerry Bruckheimer, Tim Lewicki, and that was even before Todd Lewicki was hired. But and then a couple other people, and then a bunch of media. And that was one of the coolest moments ever, because literally it was an hour after the ticket drive, and we already knew that we far exceeded the target. Mm-hmm. And so that was the moment. Everybody asked, when is the moment you knew it was going to happen? That was the moment. Because it was the league can't turn their back now, right? We got everything. Mm-hmm. We've proven this is a good hockey market, and it seems crazy now to say that, but at the time, people would literally argue with me that it wasn't a good hockey market. And this isn't Canada. This isn't the Midwest. This isn't Minnesota. And I get that. It's not, right? There's not a lot of rinks, but we do have two junior teams, right? With Everett Silvertips and Seattle Thunderbirds. There's probably 9 sheets within 20 or 30 minutes of downtown Seattle. Not a lot, but that is so much more than California, at least where I grew up. So
I mean, so even was, here, like, yeah. there's not a lot of ice.
yeah. To get on. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I knew it was pretty big adult leagues, and the demographics in the city have changed a lot too. And you probably recognize it in Vancouver a little bit, where it's getting denser. There's technology companies that are driving people coming in from out of town from those kind of Midwest areas or back East or whatever that are traditionally more hockey markets anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I think everything just lined up extremely well. And, I've been celebrating ever since.
Well, did I hear correctly? So you had spent your own advertising money promoting the ticket drive. Did I hear that correctly? Man,
that's correct.
I applaud your commitment. Obviously, you know what you've done to bring the NHL to Seattle is well documented. That's next level. I won't lie. I mean, I don't know if I would go and spend money out of my pocket to promote a Canucks ticket drive, but in fairness, if Canucks podcasts were to unite and have like a GoFundMe, we probably could move the needle. But again, that's simply out of quantity. There's like 208 of us. So mm-hmm. the thing that, that really strikes me though, is how you got into hockey down in California, and then, arguably, you brought it up to Seattle. If someone were to tell me that story, I don't know that I would believe it. Yet if you were to say, well, I was in Seattle, I went down to California and I brought hockey there, that would make more sense to me. I'm not trying to suggest I'm Vancouver born and raised. I've been here all my life. I see a lot of synergy between sort of Vancouver and Seattle. That's why I could see this. I know for me as a Vancouverite, I love that there is going to be a hockey franchise down a highway and there's now a geographical rival. Like if Vancouver and Seattle become the Edmonton and Calgary that I remember growing up to, I love that. It's easier to have that passion. Whereas like Vancouver, like, yeah, we hate Toronto, but so does every other Canadian team. We don't like Calgary and Edmonton. They're like, we don't like you either, but we really don't like the guy.
I mean, we hate the Bruins, but that's just so far away.
And in Boston, they don't really care.
You get to see them once a year, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, like that story that you shared there, that I find that striking. That's the journey.
Like, let me put some color on it. I didn't watch hockey as a kid at all because San Jose wasn't there. And, San Jose, if you recall, they had some early playoff success, like relatively early. Mm-hmm. They beat Calgary, they beat Detroit. But I never watched hockey before, but it was a reason to kind of cue in to the playoffs. And, you probably don't know because you were born with hockey, but I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so at 20 years old, I'm watching this amazing sport in this playoff hockey. And I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing. Where's this sport been all my life? Right. And so that's part of why I think I believed in it so much in Seattle. Right. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, there's so many fans here that don't even realize that they're going to be hockey fans. Right. That's the context around it.
I can completely identify with that because I was exactly same boat. I moved here 2011. I had seen one hockey game in my life before, and I think I spent most of the time getting snacks. Canucks were good, and I was just like, this is fun. It's fun being in a place that likes hockey, and then I was hooked. Yeah. Completely get that.
You could have done it. It's just the scenario didn't line up, right?
So. Exactly. If I stayed in the UK, like maybe.
Bring the NHL to London, Anna.
They can't even say the word Canucks over there, so it's hard.
Well, there is a Canadian bar in London that seems to believe they can serve poutine.
Yeah, the Maple Leaf. It's a fun place to hang out, but they don't. Properly.
Yeah, if you've never been to the Maple Leaf in London, John, don't try the poutine.
Where in London? London's a pretty big spot.
It's in Covent Garden.
There we go.
It's also opposite a really, really great bar called the Porterhouse. So just go there instead.
Oh, there's good bars in London. I didn't know that.
Oh man, there goes our Maple Leaf sponsorship. The other thing that I sort of will admit jealousy of, and I sort of did on the last show, is the fact that, you know, you had Tim Loewenke pitching you on this concept. I'm simply, you know, proud that Francesco Aquilini follows me on Twitter, though I can't explain that. And always wonder, do I have to watch what I say about the hockey team? Because the head of the we call them the family up here, because it is a family that owns the Canucks. But like the head of the family could theoretically pay attention to whatever tweets he does. It's like, follows myself, Lightforce, and I'm next to like the prime minister and the premier of the province. Like, I don't see where I match up. But you were getting pitched by Tim and his team on this concept. Like, I find that so surreal.
I was leading up to that. I was so nervous, right? Because like, I was so like in the behind the scenes, and like, I'm kind of a grunt, keep your head down, do some hard work. But like, I never got the attention kind of until that flipped, like all of a sudden hockey was a priority. And I'm like, oh, like, and so I remember getting ready to meet with him, and I was like, I was nervous. I was terrified just because I don't know. I'm not used to interacting with them. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Francesco Aquilini, he was down here for one of the press conferences. And because that's one thing that OVG did, is they showed support from other franchises or other kind of key individuals. And I remember I talked to Francesco a little bit about, you know, me getting sick of driving up there to go see a game. So,
which that, I'm sure he probably told you, it's not that long of a drive. you know, knowing like from a business perspective, I could totally see the Aquilinis wanting a team in Seattle.
Yeah.
Simply because it expands the potential fan base for that type of game. I don't know. I'm curious. Prior to the Kraken becoming a thing, how many Canucks fans would you say there were down there? Like, if you were a hockey fan, did you like the Canucks, or did you like the team that you sort of came from?
I did a survey with the fans, and one thing I asked is what's your favorite team? And I'd say 33% said the Canucks. And it's still pretty prevalent, that was the most, and it just spread throughout because everyone's kind of a transplant. And that's one thing that was always a bummer is, you know, like I would, you know, we used to go to the bars with my buddies on Saturday nights and, you know, watch some of the 4 o'clock game or the 5 o'clock game for a bit. And we would have a good time and be watching, like, we'd have 4 or 5 games on, but we're all kind of rooting for different teams. And I can't wait for the moment where we're all rooting for the same team, right? That's something that I've never kind of experienced. So that's going to be pretty incredible for a lot of people here. And I do think there's a lot of Canucks fans here, and I think there's a lot of loyalty. And I know people online say they're going to stick to their team, but you know, the heart wants what the heart wants, and we'll see how that happens over time or what happens to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like friend of the show, Lisa, who was actually the one that established the connection. Because I'll be honest, I knew nothing about NHL Seattle and now Sound of Hockey prior to her mentioning it. Like, here are the three podcasts that I listen to. She's a Canucks fan. She has said she supported the Kraken so far, and I imagine she'll support the team. I've tried to get her on record to tell me which team she'll
I think she's stuck with the team. She said she bought one t-shirt and that's as far as she'll go with Kraken. But I think she's really excited to see them. It's not going to stop her going to games.
No, and I think if I was in her position, I would support the Kraken unless they were playing the Canucks. I think that's how I'd be one of those fans, which I know up here, if I was a Vancouver Canucks fan who were to say that, there are people out there be like, oh my goodness, what are you, a Maple Leaf? But the struggle is that, you know, I view it from a perspective of you grow up on what you grow up on. It says your heart sort of, you know, follows what it wants. And I, at the end of the day, don't really care. If you are happy with what you see and you're there to support it, all for it, as long as it's not the Bruins. The other thing, though, and I know from our listenership, like we're, I mean, our claim to fame, we're the longest running Canucks podcast here in Vancouver, which when there's 200 and some odd Canucks podcasts, it's kind of cool to say it's ours. But the listeners that we've had over the years, we've actually had quite a few from just south of the border.
Yeah.
And I don't know all of them, if they're still listening, but I know one of the common pieces of conversation that happened in C4 Discord is that, oh, I really wish Seattle got a team. And if it did, I might be put in this position where I don't know if I cheer for the Canucks anymore. So, you know, the survey results that you had sort of kind of line up with that sentiment.
Check out. Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of fans up there. Like, it's okay if a couple of them jump fish.
No doubt. Like the Vancouver, like we were actually talking on our pre-show for our patrons as to like, where will the Kraken fit within the sports ecosystem? Like I would think the Seahawks are the clear number one.
Oh yeah.
And then we were starting to struggle like prior to Kraken coming in, like who would be the number two? I sort of thought the Mariners, but then I also like one of the concepts that's not as potent for us up here, like college sports don't exist to the extent they do. So then we're thinking, is it like, would it be Huskies, Cougars, or the Kraken be into that space, or the Sounders as an example? Like the Sonics not being present, we found that made that money. But like, if I say that up here, it's the Canucks clear number one. Everyone else is just playing for second place.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting kind of exercise, if you will. Like the Mariners certainly have a lot of loyalty, and it's kind of one of those teams that people are very loyal to. They play in the summer. It's kind of a different vibe. It's easy to throw the game on and kind of do stuff around the house still. And I do think, as bad as they've been lately, they haven't been to the playoffs in I don't know how long, like the longest pro North American streak of not making the playoffs. But I still believe that there's a lot of strong Mariner fans here because of that loyalty. That's what they grew up with. They remember, you know, Ken Griffey and, you know, Harold Reynolds and some of those old-time Mariners. So I don't expect the Kraken to take the number two spot anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But one thing I always think about is wait till this team gets in the playoffs, right? And kind of going back to what Anna and I were talking about, how what our hook was, if you will, is just kind of the excitement of playoff hockey is something like I don't experience in any other sports watching it. And I used to be hardcore baseball and football fan, and like that's I've ditched them both for more time spending with hockey. Like there's no doubt. Like I'd rather read about hockey than watch some of those games right now. And it's I watch the Seahawks a lot, but for the most part, like if it was a Kraken or the Seahawks, I would definitely choose the Kraken. Now that's me. Obviously I might be super fan, maybe not the good proxy for the fan base, but I do think there's going to be a lot of people that don't know how much they're going to love it. Right. And I'd like to aim to be as popular as the Seahawks, maybe not realistic, but I think, you know, with a decently winning team, an entertaining product, I know it's an entertaining product, get a couple playoff rounds and all of a sudden you've got people hooked. Do you remember when Nashville was in the Stanley Cup final and they had their watch party on Broadway and it was a million people, right?
Yeah.
That's to me the vision, right? Yeah. And it doesn't matter if there'd be like 2 million for Seahawks watch party. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just, that's that to me, Nashville. And I love Nashville because they do it their way. They do hockey their way. They've been a fun team, haven't had a lot of money, but like you can see what a deep playoff round had done to that franchise, because 10 years ago, they were moving to Hamilton, Ontario, right? And so that to me is what success kind of will get you, right?
Well, it's funny you mentioned sort of, you know, Nashville and sort of playoff hockey. I think in 2011, like when the Canucks run, Canucks had to go through Nashville, who was arguably a surprise, so to speak.
Yep. But
by all accounts, from Canucks fans that made the trip, that was like, yeah, there's something special about going to Boston or going to Chicago, even sort of down to San Jose. But everyone still speaks about the experience they had in Nashville. And I would not equate hockey in Nashville as being the one that people would like how is that above going to the garden or, you know, being in the madhouse? And yet that, like, I have a friend who she went to a game in every one of the series. And to this day, she still speaks about, Nashville, the fans were great. They were into it. You could tell they're passionate. They knew what was going on. And that was key because, you know, there's this perception that, it's not a hockey market. They're just cheering because it's cool. No, these were people who were fully invested in what was going on ice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, right? Seattle will find its own version of that because, you know, anything like Nashville or Vegas in Seattle would seem quite fake, but I really want to go see Canucks in Vegas. I would hate it if my team was like that. I would find that every game to be exhausting, but love to go to that one time. And but I feel like Seattle's going to be sort of more low key, but it'll find its space for sure. And I'm sure it'll be a thing for locals.
Yeah.
Before we take a quick break, though, I do want to sort of touch on one thing. It will be good to see if the Kraken don't have to market to Vancouver when the Canucks are in town, like the Mariners do when the Blue Jays pass through. Like when the Blue Jays pass through Seattle, arguably that's a home game for the Blue Jays with the number of Maple Leafs in the crowd, people singing "Oh Canada." Like, I know that that's, I mean, baseball's not, you know, the same as hockey, but if the Kraken don't have to market to Vancouver during a Canucks visit, that's good. I mean, I'd love to be there, and I'd love to be a group of fans who are to make the, you know, make it an energetic place. But
when the border is not closed to men, women, and tortoises, we will definitely be there for a game.
Yeah, I do think there'll be quite a few Canucks fans coming down, right? The games are going to be sold out, so it's going to be all secondary market. But yeah, those Mariner games, I assume you've been down, Chris. Have you been down before?
So I've actually never been to a Mariners game.
I've been to two, Chris.
I know. I flew to Toronto to see a baseball game. I didn't drive down the highway.
It is. It's insane how many Toronto fans are down here for those games. And keep in mind, there's a lot of Canadians that live here too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually that's who brings me out to those games. I usually attend those games only because it's my buddies that want to go.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, sure, I'll go. But like, it is insane. It is a home game for Toronto.
It is funny. Like, this town is not a baseball town whatsoever, but like, when the Blue Jays went far in the playoffs, suddenly every single bar I walked into was packed out with people. And I was like, where do you come from? I've never spoken to a Blue Jays fan before in my life.
I think that speaks to Vancouver as a sports market, though. Like, we hate Toronto until Toronto's the cool thing to do.
Yeah,
so we say we're Canadian.
Yeah, the Raptors.
Raptors are the same thing. And I'm a bitter Grizzlies fan, which generally relates well with bitter Sonics fans. There's no way I'm cheering for any basketball team, but if a Canadian team happens to win, that would be kind of nice. So somehow I have this like moral victory somewhere down the road.
Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what? We're going to take ourselves a short break here. You'll listen to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast and CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So now that we've known a little bit about the journey, let's learn more about the podcast itself. I understand it's not a one-man show.
No, it's not. And it wouldn't be very entertaining if it was a one-man show. That's for sure. I've got two other co-hosts. One is Darren Brown. He's from Minnesota. He was doing a Minnesota Wild podcast for a while, but reached out a couple of years ago and wanted to help out, get involved in the cause. And that podcast died down. And then there's another guy who's a friend and writes for the site a lot, Andy Ide, who actually is the beat writer for the Seattle Thunderbirds. So I've known him over the years. And the timing just lined up. It was 2 years ago. So we were kind of entering our We're entering our third season. We don't even have a team.
I know. That's amazing.
but it's been so much fun. And I'll bet you can relate. Is one thing that's awesome is the community around it, right? Mm-hmm. The fans and the listeners like that will comment almost every week. It is so cool because that to me is what this whole movement's been about, is community and the hockey community and creating these fun relationships. Like, If the team never happened, I would have met so many cool people on the way, regardless, right? And I'm not just saying that. It was a blast, and I am really lucky to go through all that. But the podcast is just another extension of that, and it's been awesome. I mean, like, Darren does a killer job editing and he kind of running the show. You know, we've built confidence with the team to line up guests. We've had over. Well, since the original break in March, I think we've had 4 NHLers, which I never thought we'd ever get. So that was great. We had Derek Ryan. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just listened to that one. That was really interesting.
What a killer story, man. And he's from Washington State, obviously. I've always wanted to get him on. I've known his story, and he offered to come on, and those are the moments. Like, and we had Ray Ferraro last winter, which was like incredible. Like, yeah. I can't believe he offered to come on.
Oh, so. Ray Ferraro is the best. Like, I could listen to him talk about hockey forever. But yeah. I will say, if you listeners haven't heard the Derek Ryan episode, would encourage you to check it out. It's a lesson in perseverance, that's for sure. So, really interesting interview.
Yeah, and I don't know
if he's a local kid. The fact that you've had him before us, I mean, that kind of makes me further jealous.
Well, and it was funny. It was like, I remember we recorded it and Darren and I gave it because he came in studio to do it. And we slapped each other a high five after it was done because it was like such a cool moment. And I will watch, you know, cause I obviously get the NHL package and yeah. I will watch, like, you know, Ottawa play any game. And if I can listen to Ray Ferraro, right. Oh, yeah. If I could pick my, That's who I would watch, and that's who I would listen to all the time. And, you know, and I don't know if you guys know that we get CBC down here, or a lot of people get CBC down here. So Saturday nights is like, we always watch Hockey Night in Canada on, on CBC. And I love it, man. I can't believe people and Bieksa, right? Thinking about Bieksa over the break. Like, I was reflecting on the year. What a great. You know, like I'm going to post an article in a couple of days, but it's going to be about giving thanks. And one of them is the coming out of post playing Kevin Bieksa, right? Mm-hmm. I just love him and love seeing him. And I can't believe that so many people in the US don't get to see him because he's on CBC or Sportsnet, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel very lucky to be able to watch him. And it's those little things that I maybe geek out about a little bit, but it's really cool. And we're really fortunate to be in the spot we are.
Yeah. I was going to say, you probably get more Ray Ferraro than we do. Because
it'd be a regional, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So Ray being on TSN means the only way for us to consume him is to somehow have that. Like, I mean, outside of just watching like a 30 minute, you know, that's hockey show. Like if we wanted to see him play the Sens, we have to go to a market that allows it because the Vancouver Canucks own this space. So we can't see other regional teams. We can only see national broadcasts outside of the Canucks.
I mean, I'm still rooting for him to be like a national anchor. Like, I think he's,
well, he is. It's just how the rights work. Sportsnet owns hockey in Canada, right?
Yeah.
For the most part.
Well, and I maybe have a pipe dream that he would be our color guy. But I don't, I think that would be considered like a step down or a pay cut or something because going from a national Canadian color guy and does a bunch of other things, I'm sure, on TSN versus, you know, and being down here in a regional.
I don't know if he wants to step on his wife's toes at all. I don't know if there's a...
Well, maybe they both moved down here, right? Maybe they moved down here. Who knows, right?
Yeah, work as a tandem.
Yeah. Or he could... I mean, they could live there, right?
What a power couple, though.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But, well, you know,
Ray did,
he's incredible.
I mean, he started on sports, like his sort of media establishment was sports radio here in Vancouver. And then he started becoming more involved on TSN national broadcasts. And then now he's national. Like we hear him when he joins TSN 1040 on the radio.
Right. Right.
And we see his ads on TV for,
and he does a lot of great events, and that's where I met him at. And
Ray's a great guy. I've had one interaction with
him. His time. I love him.
You know, he used to question if Seattle would be a market for hockey.
Really?
It's a funny thing over the years. And he'd say with college sports, like college is really important. And I kind of asked him about that when we had him on the show, and he's like, Are you asking me if I remember what I said and like kind of giving me crap back? And I'm like, oh, no, that's not what I mean. I mean, he was cool about it, but, you know, I think that's valid to have some valid skepticism, and he said, like, you know, you still got to work to kind of establish and kind of work your way up the hierarchy and make sure that you're relevant. And I thought that was a fair assessment. Right. And that's something I would have said years ago. I just believe in the potential of hockey, which is why I believed in it so much. So, but anyway, Ray was awesome to have on the show. Yeah.
But you're right. Like you've got a team come in, but that isn't the end of the journey. Like Florida have a team, but they have to give away most of their tickets. So, you know, you've still got to
keep the
good fight.
Right? Yeah. And the season tickets are like going to be sold out. They're probably going to be sold out in the next 2 weeks, right? They're going to make an announcement that they've went through everybody. Cause right now they're going through a queuing system. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got like 20,000 deposits and then another allegedly 60,000 on a wait list, which, you know, like that's insane. They're on about number 6,000 or 7,000 right now. So they're not even through like half of the deposits, and they've probably only got a couple thousand ticket packages left.
Wow.
If that. So, yeah.
So there's some interest is what you're saying.
Allegedly. Yeah. And what's amazing is people who I never knew were hockey fans or aren't hockey fans or just sports fans are like asking me about it. Right. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I've got deposit. I'm like, what? You know, like, yeah, I'm just a sports fan, so I wanted to go. I'm like, okay. Yeah. So, but they've never watched hockey before. So that's the opportunity too.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the team. Because technically, right, there is going to be a team. I mean, no players quite yet. Do you think the Kraken are going to get the Golden Knights treatment when it comes to an expansion draft? Or do you think the NHL has sort of seen that experiment and decided that maybe we're not as keen? Like, part of me is I think the NHL likes that, but I'm not entirely sure the rest of the league, team-wise,
right,
likes
okay, that. Well, here's a question for you. What if, would you offer anything if we took Louis Erickson off your hands?
Oh yeah, damn straight. Like, in fact, like as a Canucks fan,
okay,
what would it cost?
Yeah, that becomes the point. And it probably wasn't that big of a deal a year ago it'd be like, okay, you just live with Louis Erickson, but with the cap crunch that everybody's under right now, particularly the Canucks, all of a sudden there's these vulnerabilities that teams have. And I think Vancouver's one of them, to be honest.
We've signed a lot of bad contracts. I think we're like top of the list.
Yeah. There's a few you can have. I mean, Berchi is another one that's on the list. You could probably get him. I mean, could we send there's probably three or four players. You could probably have an entire line from Vancouver. What it would cost, right? I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Calgary's doing apparently. So.
Well, they're taking the wrong Canucks from us.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, but like, what would it cost to take Louis Erickson? And so my only point was that was an exercise. There's other teams in that same boat, right, where they need to get rid of somebody. And salary cap's going to be the big driver here. And they might kind of put some of the higher-end guys that have a higher salary cap with the hopes that Seattle takes them, right? You know, you could say PK Subban, right? $9 million. He's probably going to be exposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's $9 million, but I don't think the Devils are that cash strapped where it's that big of a deal. But what if there's a sweetener to make it more advantageous for Seattle to take PK, right?
Right. Yeah.
PK hopefully has a little bit of a bounce back, and he's a serviceable defenseman, right? Mm-hmm. And $9 million a year, maybe not, but you start to see, I think there's going to be a little bit more of those kind of conversations. Maybe not to the same Vegas did, but there was a lot of context around some of the Vegas side deals that people don't realize that there was salary, you know, like I think of Anaheim sent Shea Theodore over to Vegas if they took Clayton Stoner off their hands. Mm-hmm. Clayton Stoner never played a game again, right? And Shea Theodore was exempt. And so like they didn't need to send him over, but that was a side deal. And they did a service. Now it looks pretty bad right now, but everybody seems to forget Clayton Stoner was part of that deal. And so you could imagine like a Louis Erickson type scenario. So I think there's going to be side deals, maybe not to the same extent. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if Minnesota is going to send anybody over if we don't select Matt Dumba. So,
well, sort of look at like what George McPhee did to the Panthers. I mean, there's sort of two minds. Like as a fan,
yeah,
I hope that Seattle gets the same expansion experience that Vegas yeah. did, right? Like because you know, as fans are apt to do, and Canucks fans maybe a little bit more than others, we're all GMs really in our spare time, and Louis Erickson is a contract that we've pretty much put on every single roster. I think it's an expectation that Seattle wind up with Louis. Now, that might be the greatest example simply because Louis' deal's done at the end of the season. Maybe if there's a way that Seattle can have a player before the expansion draft, that might be nice. But but I think that's where, from a fan perspective, and I think individual GMs might want that. But then there's also this sort of, I don't know, sense of competitive fairness that you have to, you know, pay your dues before yeah. you're successful in the NHL. And I genuinely wonder if there are enough sort of NHL teams organizationally or possibly ownership wise that see what happened with Vegas becoming successful so quickly. And yet maybe I'm not feeling they've paid their dues yet. I'm not trying to suggest the crack and dome.
I was rooting for Vegas just because I was rooting for it to succeed down there, right? Mm-hmm. And so many people were just convinced like they shouldn't put a team in Vegas. I mean, that was the talk. And it's just like Vegas is so unique. Like, let them be, right? Let them figure it out, because you can't compare them to Arizona at all. It's just completely different world. I don't think anybody gave them a chance to start the season, right? With that roster, nobody thought they were going to be successful. Nobody. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden people are like, oh, GMs aren't going to play this game with Seattle. Yeah, maybe. But like everybody wrote them off. So there's going to be some other kind of opportunity for Seattle, whether they get a bunch of, you know, maybe they get some younger guys compared to what Vegas, because Vegas had to kind of take some of the older guys off people's hands. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm hopeful. You know what? I want them to play meaningful games in February. That's kind of my goal for year one, right? Yeah. So where it feels like they're mathematically have a chance at the playoffs, it feels interesting. You're starting to get excited. If they don't make the playoffs, I'm not gonna lose sleep over it, or you know, tell them to sack Ron Francis or anything yeah. like that. So.
Yeah, I was just
go ahead, Anna.
Okay, I was just going to say that I think there's just an element of male pride and how stupid Vegas made a lot of GMs look.
Yeah.
And like, what are you talking about, Anna? That doesn't exist.
But just like the stubbornness of yeah. that. So like they might even pass up some good deals that Seattle are offering just because they don't want to look dumb in a year's time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If it protects them from looking like idiots, then maybe, yeah, they'll probably do it, right?
Yeah.
Whatever makes them look less stupid is the goal.
The good news for you is that Jim Benning has no such qualms. So.
Yeah, if Ron isn't already making nice with Jim
with Honest Jim.
It might be an opportunity lost. Speaking of, you know, the Canucks, realistically, I mean, if I were to say, you know, who off the roster would you want? I'm pretty sure I could name four players that won't be available. At least I don't think wouldn't be available, but who knows with how things go. But who do you realistically think is going to be coming down to Seattle from Vancouver?
Well, I think generally people are circling Holtby, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't kind of jump to that conclusion. I think he's an option if he has like a decent year. And I think the timing's right. And I think they even backloaded that contract to make sure it was.
Yeah. Real money will be the second year of his deal.
Yeah. I mean, the cap hits the cap hit, but, and I don't think that's the worst case scenario. I think Seattle needs a starting goalie, a bona fide starting goalie. Mm-hmm. And Holtby, assuming he has a halfway decent year, a little bit probably better year than he did this year, I think he'll be one of those candidates. But, you know, I think isn't Adam Gaudette like kind of on a bubble, like the bubble situation, or Tyler Mott maybe being kind of a bubble guy to be protected?
You can't take Tyler from us.
No?
Well, Tyler has become a cult hero up here.
A cult hero. Yeah, he had a mock girl summer, as our friends broadcast dubbed it. So I think he's a bit of a lovable character. So I think we'd be quite upset. But Adam Gaudette.
Well, but tell me who you protect. And
well, it's two different things.
He is
cult hero and protection.
Yeah, he is completely the type of guy that would be exposed. And Adam Gaudette, especially as Canucks had him backed into a corner and made him sign a 1-year deal,
but he's RFA, right?
Yeah.
He won't be a black hole RFA going into next season. See, like a player like the Jake Virtanen, who is the beaten horse up this way, is a name that comes up. I think I'm a firm believer Jake has a future in NHL. It's just it could be that he's in a local kid and that plays against him, because the expectations of him being a quote unquote Vancouver kid.
Yeah.
Require him to do no wrong. And
plus he's not got the greatest people around him. I mean, that's being a bit cruel,
if he has a great season, I don't think the Canucks expose him. But then this past season was actually a reasonable year for his performance.
Well, I assume he's going to be protected, but maybe that's a stretch. And I know he gets dumped on a little bit up there, but I don't think he's like a bad candidate if you're looking for somebody who can play right now. Mm-hmm. Tanner Pearson's UFA after this year, is that correct? I think so. And I'm not sure, you know, there's like a 48-hour window where Seattle can negotiate with those potential UFAs before they select. So that could be a scenario if Seattle wants to maybe try to see if they can strike a deal with him before drafting him. But yeah, like Jake's a candidate. I think Gaudette's Tyler Mott's a candidate. I don't see anybody on defense right now, but and Holtby. I mean, I think we just named the four that are probably in the mix, if you will. And things can change, but. Mm-hmm. But not much. When you have four people that you can kind of keep an eye on, I think there's not much that can change. Maybe they move. Would they trade Jake now instead of? So
yeah, we've talked about this on previous shows. Like, is it possible that Jake is now, like, as Matt would call them, sweetener?
Yeah,
Jake. Like, does Jake get traded for another project or a sweetener for something else? Like, you know, you raised the point that Vancouver Canucks are in cap trouble. I mean, they're over the cap as it exists right now. And I believe the common belief is that Michael Ferland's NHL career might be done.
Yeah.
And if not done.
Yeah. But they have to get under it without him coming off. So.
Yeah. So I mean, there's definitely something that's going to happen this ish season. I say this season, cause who knows when, but yeah, hard to say. I think if you were to ask, you know, our listeners, I think the majority would probably have Holtby at the top as being the top target without knowing what other goaltenders might be available. Right. And the way the deal was structured, Vancouver is kind of banking on two things. One, not having to pay as much out of pocket on a tough season, but two, wouldn't it be nice if he's not on the books next year? Because, you know, our young goaltenders have suddenly blossomed to the point that we've developed from within. So in Demko and,
yeah,
and DiPietro.
Yeah. Where is DiPietro on the development cycle?
I mean, he's a lot further than the last time we saw him. He's had a really good year in Utica.
I don't necessarily know he's backup material yet, though.
I wouldn't say he's ready to back up.
Well, goalies like take such a long time anyway, right? Yeah. It's no surprise. I don't think that's any should be disappointing to anybody, based on kind of normal trends. But
I mean, I think Demko's not ready to start and like for an NHL team. So I think,
what are you talking about? He's now a verb. Yeah. He Demko'd the Golden Knights.
Demko'd. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, and I'm rooting for him because he's from California originally. So
right?
I always love to see these, non-traditional markets, as they call them, players do well. So, but I was rooting for Demko for sure during the playoffs. So, but you know, like the Canucks fans are going to say Holtby because there's nothing to be lost there. Right.
Well, I think the other players, though, that Canucks fans will offer are not players that the Kraken would look to. Like,
right.
You know, Louis Erickson.
Yeah.
We'll buff and shine him. We'll maybe put a bow.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You need to send more than Louis Erickson.
I was going to say, do you want him right now? Like, is that like stuff to do with the arena that he can help with?
Maybe work some strategy. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So I think
more bricks and mortar. Like, he can be a laborer.
You know, and again, this might be synonymous with hockey fans, but the Canucks fans, as I've paid attention to, our idea of a realistic trade or a realistic offering is far from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know Holtby might be easiest and it might be the preferred, but I think when I look at the roster, it's not to say Holtby would be like, yeah, you're right. A Gaudette might be, a Vertanen. Like, I don't know. Vertanen being protected would have to do with performance in this upcoming season. Like, yeah. I think he's reached that point where he needs to show more. We talked about a few episodes back where him having a good season is probably not good enough. He probably needs to be better than good based on his progression. So, you know, as I think through, you're right. There's probably going to be there's quite a few choices. I would have never thought Mott, but then cult hero status, I don't see him being protected.
Yeah. No, yeah, like,
yeah, I don't think he's protected, but
he is, yeah, he has his value. Like, he's a great player, he hustles really hard, but like, he's not, his value is more in the pop culture for sure.
And he's I think I saw
great dude,
go ahead.
Don't worry,
but I think that's important to have like good people to start the franchise. I know that shouldn't come into play, but like, you're building a culture here that's kind of important too. It's funny. I've seen some mock drafts here and there, and I've seen people project Jay Beagle, and I'm like,
he's good in the room.
Yeah.
He's got Stanley Cup rings.
Or I'm not ring, sure but... I'm not sure that's how this works here. Right. So like, it's a bunch of Canucks fans projecting who they want.
I know. Like, we will shill for like any of these big contracts. But
like that's hockey fans, right? That's how they position things. Like, I don't know, this Jay Beagle guy, like you said, good in the room, Stanley Cup winner.
Well,
like,
see, the thing about the Vancouver market, though, in fairness, is we're told that good in the room is worth more than points on the ice.
That won't fly down here, unfortunately. Like, nobody knows that term yet, right? he's good in the room. What does that mean? Like,
I mean,
you don't play in a room, do you?
So. We don't know either, but apparently it means a lot.
Speaking of mock drafts, I did read one recently, which had from the Red Wings, Troy Stetcher going, so poor guy, just like getting knocked around, I guess, like Holtby.
Yeah, he wouldn't be that bad. He would be good. I think, I mean, let's be clear. Red Wings don't have much to offer. Honestly, no. They really don't.
He's cheap.
I think he would be a solid choice out of Detroit. I think that's that would be good.
This is a sincere sell this time that he would be good. And
well, it's easy because you can say that now. I believe you because he's on a different team.
Exactly. Sincerely. Like, he's good.
I hate to see Troy from Richmond down in Seattle because that when we talk local kid, that kid grew up where I live. Like we're talking.
Where did he play junior? Did he play with
junior? Ooh. So he came. He grew up through like the Pacific International Junior Hockey League, which I don't know if it's international anymore, but he came through the Richmond Sockeyes junior system. And then I think he went from there to college, if memory serves me correct.
Okay.
I think so, straight. Okay. And then got signed, as a
but I mean, he's
college.
Like Troy from Richmond, the there are Canucks fans that would have said, oh, yeah, peace be with him because he didn't contribute much. But this was a serviceable blue liner.
Yeah.
In the bottom, you know, bottom pairing and could elevate to your second pairing if need be in a pinch. And for what he signed for in Detroit, I think Detroit got a steal.
So low risk.
I would love to see him get an opportunity in Seattle where he probably gets a better opportunity to show what he could do that he wasn't ever really going to get here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And
Probably
we won't get in Detroit.
Yeah.
We do have a lot. Another thing, a fan scenario that happens is people try to project future Thunderbirds to be on the Seattle Kraken. Like, oh, like, can't we just offer sheet Matthew Barzal? Right. That's what people are talking about. I'm like, well, I don't think they're going to, or Carter Hart when he comes up because he played in Everett.
Yeah. Right. But
so somehow we're going to have those two guys our first year. So we're looking pretty good.
If that's there's an unwritten rule up here that if you were a Vancouver Giant, you'll never play for the Canucks.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I was going to say, don't let the good Thunderbird slip from underneath your nose because that's what Canucks do. If you read the Giants' Ring of Honor, it's just like a who's who of like
all
NHL.
These potential Canucks players that
never played in Vancouver.
Could have been, never were, right? Like, because that's how easy it is.
The latest being Bowen Byram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
Ty Ronning. Yeah. Anyway.
Did I hit a sore spot?
Well, no, it's, I'm genuinely curious if we were to go and look, like, you know, how many Calgary Hitmen or Red Deer Rebels find their way to the Calgary Flames or Oil King, you know, like we could go across Canada with all the junior franchises that exist and truly how many of these players out of these junior teams in that same city go to the big club. Probably not that many because of how the NHL draft functions. Just they were
it's
a Giant.
Just math, right? Yeah.
Doesn't mean if they're that good, trust me, your team needs to be that bad for it to sort
you don't
of
have,
work
you
out.
You don't have exclusive rights to get them. Right?
Yeah. And that's probably why we hang on to local kids so much and overvalue them so much. Like, Troy and Jake and even Mike Santarelli. Remember him?
Lucic is a good example. Everyone had Lucic coming to Vancouver simply because, he was a former Giant. He's returning home. Now, one might argue the Vancouver Canucks dodged a bullet there because Lucic ain't the same in Edmonton as he was in Boston. But was he ever coming to Vancouver? Who knows?
Yeah. Evander Kane played. He's a Vancouver Giant too, right?
Yep. Gallagher as well.
Yeah.
Gallagher is the one I think the Canucks had the opportunity to possibly get and simply, you know, I'm going to use a basketball reference here. It's like Steve Nash had two chances to come to Vancouver. And the first time it's like, he doesn't fit in the plan. And the second time we don't need to market our team, which interesting to point that one out.
Yeah.
So, you know, just looking to wrap up and as we do, where can our listeners find your podcast? Because our listeners, just so you know, are the best hockey podcast listeners in the Vancouver area. Like, again, 208 Vancouver Canucks podcasts, they choose to listen to us. So only the best will want to listen to you.
Right.
So where can they find you?
If that truly is the case, they can find me. Okay. We have a website, soundofhockey.com, but the podcast is Sound of Hockey, like Puget Sound. Not to be confused with the CBC show, The Sounds.
Which is like New Zealand.
Yeah, I know. But I watch it. I was during the playoffs, I saw that ad so much. I'm like, okay. And I spent some time in New Zealand. So I'm watching it. No spoilers.
I'm watching it too.
Not seen it, but.
And War of the Worlds, for the record. I'm watching that one too.
Same.
Which is the first time I've ever like recorded a non-hockey CBC show in my life, and I've got two of them going on. So anyway, so the podcast Sound of Hockey, like Puget Sound, that's available on everywhere you can get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all that stuff. And it's a good time. We've had some great guests, and it's kind of a similar approach where it's just a good hangout with some three friendly people. So give it a listen if you want to hear more. And here I'll do one plug, is Brendan Dillon was on our show as well. He's from Vancouver area, mm-hmm. as well. And he shared his story about juniors, because he didn't get drafted in Bantam. So he didn't get drafted by the Thunderbirds, but he ended up playing there. But he told the story about not even getting picked up at a junior A. It eventually had to drive like an hour and a half, 2 hours to play junior B or whatever at the time. And he's got an amazing story, not drafted in NHL either. He had a lucrative deal this summer playing with the Capitals, but he's another former Thunderbird. Anyway, if you listen to one and you have some Vancouver kind of listeners, they might enjoy Brendan Dillon, because he was a great listen, and not like a typical hockey interview.
Cool.
Neat.
Well, and I have not listened to a full episode yet. I will be honest.
That's okay. Problem, I'm not judging.
It's if I was still commuting beyond bedroom to den, I would. It's just now it's
See, I listen to more podcasts now because there's no one checking up on me. Because I just listen to
the lack of commuting is like severely limited my, you know, I probably had a 10-hour podcast playlist every week, and now it's like I can't do it, because it's like 15 minutes walking the dog every day. That's right. About it.
Well, and that's Thursdays when I go pick up the daughter from daycare is my time. Oh, and my Saturday morning trips to Costco. That's essentially the
it's exciting. It sounds exciting, Chris.
Yeah, the two times
2020, man. Listen. Like that's our lives now.
I was gonna say, what I did do is I did read some of the articles that you have on the website, and that's, you know, we're just a podcast, but you're a little bit more than that. So I mentioned that our listeners should check some of them out. Some really good content you've got created there.
Yeah, we have great contributors. Like we have five people contributing, and it doesn't work without the five. I can't do it. I'm not cut out to do it alone. But I've got five great people kind of contributing, and I've really appreciated their help, and that's what's making it so successful. Like, so that's kind of the reality of it, is that they're really good, and I'm just here for the ride.
Well, you've done quite a bit on your own trying to bring the team to there. So, you know, like it's fine
to take a back seat
now, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just
enjoy your free beers when the time comes.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. At John Barnight, when your number gets put up on the Seattle Kraken Ring of Honor,
number zero.
Hey, whatever. As long as the name is up there, that's all that counts, right?
Yeah.
As we do in each and every episode, we ask for some final thoughts, words of wisdom for all of our listeners. And John, why don't I ask you if you have any thoughts or words of wisdom you'd like to share to everyone here that's listening to C4?
Oh, this is tough. I didn't remember this in the last episode I listened to. So, I do want to say, like, I'm a pretty normal person. I'm not the most talented person. And I just think that a lot of really everyday people can do some amazing things. And I've had an amazing run and amazing luck. But it wasn't because I'm super talented or anything. I just stuck to it. And I think people have the ability to do that. So that's my little kind of words of wisdom from what I've learned on my journey.
Yeah. We're 200 and some odd episodes in, probably best words of wisdom we've ever had. Anna.
Well, I'm going to go for much more flippant. Final closing thoughts, because I'm not as wise as John. But unlike my unprepared co-host, I did listen to a few of your episodes, and one episode that stuck out, and I've actually shared this with Chris as well, that I was listening to when you had Andrew Allen, the Kraken goalie scout.
Oh, yeah.
Who was great, but the part of his story that stuck out was the 1 year he played for the Macon Whoopee team.
Macon Whoopee, yeah.
And I got obsessed with that, and now I have ordered a Macon Whoopee t-shirt that's coming over. It's like an early Christmas present to myself because it really made me laugh. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that kind of stuck out. When we looked at his elite prospect profile, that stuck out for sure.
I mean, they came out of a whooping crane's head. That's way better than coming out of a shark. I'm sorry to your brethren in Saturday, yeah. But it is.
What about a whale jumping out of a sea that's apparently ice? Not the same?
Honestly, I like went to so many games before I noticed that that was happening.
Oh, man, I don't know if I can top either of you. All I'm going to do is just, again, suggest everyone check you out. And we have you on as not only the longest running but top rated Seattle Kraken podcast. All we can claim is longest running Canucks podcast. So,
yeah. Well, let's check in about 8 years and see if we're still going. So,
well, I'm considering how much you've persevered in the 3 years you didn't have a team. I'm going to say it's probably going to continue on until such time as maybe your name's on the
Let's hope so, yeah. Right?
Yeah. But thanks again, John, for tuning in. For those of the listeners who, want to check them out, it's soundofhockey.com. You can find Sound of Hockey Podcast and all the different podcasters out there. And on that note, if for some reason you're listening to C4 and you haven't clicked that subscribe button yet, please do so. It helps you get the greatest and best Canucks hockey coverage you can find this side of the Fraser River and or possibly best mediocre content you can get in Vancouver. We're publishing bi-weekly, it being the off season, so every 2 weeks you'll find a main show. But if you happen to be one of our patrons exclusively listening in, you're also going to get a weekly show because we add in Off the Rails, where Anna and I do what we do best, go off the rails. And if you want to get involved in the best Canucks community out there, it's more civil than Canucks Twitter, but has the same argumentative style. Join C4 Discord. That is discord.io/C4podcast. So on behalf of Missing in Action, Matt Lee at Matt_Lee_61, the possibly still missing in action, though we did see a picture of him, Adam Wilmel, Carter at Adam FOC, myself, Chris at Lightforce, Anna Forsyth at A4C03, and John Barr. And John, I never asked if you were on Twitter to plug your
Twitter. I am on Twitter. NHL to Seattle.
There we go. Make sure you slap a follow button and harass him about, him not wanting to take all of our greatest NHL players off of our hands, like, Lou Eriksson or Jay Beagle.
Jay Beagle, Lou Eriksson. Yeah, perfect.
Greatest players.
Take them all.
Good in the room. Good in the room. but on behalf of all of us, thank you for tuning in, because guess what? We're out.